Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It is good to be back. Episode 1, Season 10. And thank you all, by the way, for still downloading some of the older episodes. I've noticed over the last couple of weeks in our little holiday that the figures are still going up for the old episodes, which is great. And new people finding us all the time. Welcome to the party, as they say. And I hope you're enjoying it. Anyway, normally, if you've got used to the programme, at this point, I'd say on my left, I have Jack Bennion and he'd say hello. He's not there this week. If he would be, it'd be weird because he'd be sat on a dormitory at this point. And not... Then I'd say on my right, hello, Ryan Champion. And Ryan Champion would say,
hello. And it's good to actually be on your right-hand side rather than on your virtual right-hand side.
I know. And the reason why Ryan Champion is sat on my right-hand side is because we're at Sweet Lamb. And for our overseas listeners, you've probably heard us bang on about Sweet Lamb and the amphitheatre and everything else. It is a really, really special place. Anyway, Ryan and I thought we'd come and do a little bit of a feature. And it also enabled me to come and try my new excitable R2 rally car, which I'm still giddy about, by the way. And we've also spoke about tuition and things like that. And I'll be honest with you, I struggle to find somebody to give me any tuition, so I just asked Ryan Champion.
Yeah, I mean, you got a long way down the list, but, you know, thanks for getting to the bottom of the list and actually not ignoring me.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. The fact that we speak pretty much 3 or 4 times a week, I thought I might as well ask him. And that's how Ryan ended up here. But no, he's very much an expert in tuition. So I thought I'd tap into that. He's never asked me for any expert advice on anything because I'm not an expert in anything. So there you go. But he appears on our podcast every week. So he is the go-to guy. So there you go. Anyway, I'm wittering on. And the reason why I'm wittering on is because I'm quite excited because we're now sat in the R2 rally car. We've got it. All the lights are on, and all I have to do is press this little button here. Which means we're about to go out onto the stage. Folks, we will be back with Jack Bennion after this break, and we'll talk more about what happened between Ryan and I in this little rally car a bit later on the podcast.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Now I can actually say hello to Jack Bennion. Of course, we normally say at the top of the programme, as I said at the top, but now we're back in the studio, and we're going to talk about what went on after recording that segment, Ryan and I, very, very shortly. But now Jack Bennion's joined us. Hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello. Yeah, sorry, I was too lazy to drive up to Sweet Lamb and watch you do a bit of testing.
It wasn't testing. It was expert tuition and expert telling somebody how to aim.
Well, if I'd have turned up, I'd have known that, wouldn't I?
You would have done, in fairness, you would have done. So, yeah, folks, we're now, you know, through the joys of recording, we've done the test, we've done the rally, and I've been severely reprimanded by Ryan Champion since it all. So there you go. We had a reasonable morning, didn't we, Ryan Champion?
Yeah, I think you did. I think first time out in the car, you set some good times by your own admission. Then you want a bit more practice in the car, but I think you enjoyed it, didn't you?
It was mega. It was absolutely mega. And the reason why I know it was mega, because for those eagle-eyed or eagle-eared, even that's an expression, will notice right at the top, I said, hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 1, season 10. It's not season 10 at all. It's season 9. That's how excited I was to be sat at Sweet Lamb alongside Ryan Champion in an R2 rally car. I'd lost all cohesion of where we were up to with our seasons of our podcast. So there you go.
Yeah, you never got the word cohesion out, would you?
I wouldn't have done it at that point. No, I'll be honest with you. I was struggling to hold with a wee in, let alone anything else.
Too much information.
Just before we go any further, right? Coming down that hill with you alongside me at Sweet Lamb, and people will know it's been used on GB many, many times.
But and Dirt Rally, don't forget, because it's tricky on Dirt Rally coming down there flat out.
It is, yeah. I don't think I've ever been so scared in my life when I've got somebody screaming next to me, don't break, when every fibre of my body, Jack Bennion, I've got to be honest with you, was saying, break!
That's why he's a driver. Yeah, that's, coach, and that's why you're asking him for his services.
And that's why it goes to prove that anybody can aim a car, but very few people can drive them. I go in the aim section. How about you, Jack?
Definitely aim.
Yeah, I think so too. Anyway, boys, we've been away for 2 weeks. If you've missed us, folks, we're sorry, but we've got to have these 2 week breaks. Thank you for coming back and joining us. And as I said as well, thank you all so much for still downloading the older bits and pieces. We've got some bits and pieces coming up a little bit later on. We've got Gus Greensmith, who I went over to see at his little private office.
right after Rally Poland. So we're going to talk about Rally Poland a little bit later on also in the podcast. And we also got a section, of course, with Jonathan Bennett-Evans from Sweet Lamb, because we were at Sweet Lamb, so we thought it would be a good time to actually have a chat with him. So that's coming up a little bit later on. But Jack Bengen, we're going to talk Rally Poland first. We're assuming, as ever, our listeners are very, very much up to speed with Rally Poland. I assume you watched it. Did we end up with the winner that we thought it was going to be?
Because I can't even remember when Rally Poland was.
It was two weeks ago. Thierry Neuville.
It was forever. That's when it was.
I know. Thierry Neuville. Right, I've come to you first, and the reason why, because I've kept Ryan Champion for last in this particular bit, because the big thing that sticks out from Poland now, the results and everything have kind of gone, is still the issues with regards to whether the rally will be part of the WRC next year. What are your thoughts on that, Jack?
I don't think it'll be a part of the WRC next year, judging by what came out after the event. I think, you know, the FIA stuck to this policy of yellow cards, and if you get two, you're out. If they want to keep that going and they want to, you know, they want other events to fear that policy in a way, they've got to give Poland a yellow card for that event, for some of the things that we saw. They've been debated a lot on social media, haven't they, already? And I don't think we need to go back through all those again. But things like the fire truck driving into the stage, you know, those kind of things can't really be forgiven for me.
No, me neither. Right, you'll remember this, of course. Something very similar happened on a British Rally Championship round here, probably, what was it, 2012 or 2011 would have been? I know, might have
it
even
was,
been...
It was 2007.
Wow, time flies.
Are you referring to the track road rally in the Digger incident?
I am, yeah.
And you know, the only reason I remember exactly when it was is because I was car one. And thankfully, he didn't come out before car one.
Right.
So I actually managed to screw it by that one.
Now, as Jack just said, the two yellow card things, we've heard different things about Poland, right? But surely we're not going to be seeing it in the WRC. You know, they are looking to try and get new events in, and they're obviously always looking at candidates who could go. And there's definitely a candidacy there for that to be dropped now, hasn't it?
It's a shame in many ways, isn't it? Obviously, it was a new event that came into the championship. It provided something different. The stages are a definite test. I'm not sure the classic stages, in that they obviously cut up quite a lot, particularly if it's damp. But you know, real spectacular rally from a point of view of jumps and really high speed. So it brought something different. And Poland's always been a huge country for the sport. You know, rallying's always had a massive support in Poland, with huge backing for their European championship runners who, you know, we've regularly seen European champions from Poland as well. So, you know, it was nice to see the WRC going there. Big fan base, great support, but unfortunately that support just isn't controlled. You know, it's a bit like what we saw in Portugal in the past. It's all very well having good support, but you need to manage that. And so, as well as the spectator issues you talked about, the fire truck and such like. So unfortunately, it probably seems like we won't be going back there. You know, again, there's other talk of other Eastern European rounds. Will they be better managed? Let's see. I don't know.
Absolutely. Jack, I think you were part of this discussion the other week as well. I'm kind of moving on now. We've got filling coming up in the not too distant future, and we were talking about teams using smaller events and things like that. Now, Gus Greensmith mentions a little bit later on the podcast that he's doing this, the Auto Glim Rally, as preparation for Rally Finland. It's something that Thierry Neuville is also taking on. I think this is great. You know, the high end guys seem to be sending the drivers. Of course, we've got Seb Marshall coming up a little bit later on. He was out last weekend getting more tarmac practice, of course, alongside Hayden. But Thierry Neuville taking in a smaller event to get himself tuned into the finish stages.
Yeah, I think he just wants to keep the momentum going, doesn't he? I mean, Ypres didn't quite go to plan for him, so Poland was a nice way to bounce back, and I think he'll want to probably keep that up and keep this momentum going. I think, you know, one of the key things for me over Poland, and what would have been the biggest story if it wasn't for all the safety, was the amount of kind of needling going on between Neuville and Tanak and some of the other guys. There's quite a fair bit of I don't know what you would call it, really. A bit of
mind games,
too, wasn't there?
Mind games.
Yeah. Mind games is probably fair. So that was kind of, as a fan, that's always good to see, isn't it? You always want to see those competitors who are really passionate and have, you know, want to try to put the other opponents off. It's always entertaining. So it'll be interesting to see how far that goes on the next round and whether that kind of stays up. Because the only real big incident we got with that last year was Hayden and Sebastian, wasn't it? So, you know, if that's like a continuing theme through the rest of 2017, then it might make things a little bit more interesting. And we've already got this already fantastic and an entertaining season going already.
Yeah. Right. Have you ever got involved in mind games? Have you tried to wind up a competitor, or has one tried to do you, or so to speak? That sounded wrong. But have you ever been in that particular position?
I don't think consciously, but I guess inherently you're always, there's always somebody on every rally you want to compete, and I guess to a certain degree it maybe happens subconsciously. But I think that's one thing that differentiates maybe rallying a little bit with circuit racing. Yes, it goes on, but generally it's quite good natured. I mean, we do see the occasional spat in public or over the media between two drivers that have fallen out, usually Ogier and somebody else. But I do think that's one of the reasons that rallying is sometimes a little bit more friendly than circuit racing. You're not competing for that same piece of tarmac. And, you know, we often see people coming together in circuit racing and you get difficult relationships because of that. But by and large, everybody gets on in rallying. But inherently, you know, there's always somebody you want to beat, and therefore you're always going to have a bit of an edge towards certain people. Mm.
That doesn't make a great story, though, does it, Jack, for you guys, if we all get on? It's, I suppose in some ways, it's to kind of cultivate, you know, a fan base. There's got to be, you know, by our sheer nature is, you know, we're tribal, aren't we? So, you know, whether it's a football team, a rugby team, or whatever it may be, or country v country, or, you know, your local team versus your local team, I suppose there's cultivation now of a fan base for certain drivers. It needs to be fed, and fed by you guys, I suppose, in the media. And are we in the media? I don't know what category we fall into, but you certainly are, Jack. But that's got to be fed, hasn't it?
Well, I think fan base is what you're really getting at, because, you know, as media, we're always going to find a story. How interesting that story is obviously depends on a number of things, and how sort of entertaining the actual sportsman can make the sport and the process is always it always makes things a little bit easier. So, you know, you've got all sorts of historical battles between two sportsmen or more, haven't you, in different years and different eras. And quite often those two rivalry come to define different eras of sport. So, you know, you've got like Senna and Prost in the late 80s in Formula One. You know, that battle of those two people does define that era of the sport. So if you can have that kind of that real humanity in the battles that you're having, it really makes it that bit more appealing to fans to watch, I think. And I think that's probably what drives it. But whether we're going to get that between Thierry Neuville and Ott Tanak is very unlikely, because, you know, Ott's the kind of guy who just kind of stands there and laughs, and Thierry just tries harder each time to try and wind him up, and Ott thinks it's, you know, he takes great pleasure in laughing harder each time Thierry tries to wind him up. So to me, I don't think that's going to be a kind of needling point. It's just a pair of them doing what they do best. Or it's very sort of standoffish and kind of just shrugs his shoulders and gets on with things. If he has a crash, he just turns around and says, well, you know, we were pushing hard, so that can happen. And, you know, Jerry's quite similar in that sense as well. So, interesting to see how it plays out for the rest of the year.
Absolutely, absolutely. Another story that you guys have broke today, Jack, and I'm going to talk to Ryan about it in a second, but I'll come to you first. Citroën give up this year to push for 2018 glory. Did we need to be told? I'm not sure.
it's an odd one, isn't it? There seems to have been advertising this, putting this out, and obviously we've got the story this week of Citroën sort of writing this year off. But it was always my understanding that they weren't expecting to win the championship this year, and that's not what they were aiming for. The idea was to come in and win rallies this year and develop the car, because, you know, if the way you look at things, you know, they were always going to be on a slight back foot this year, weren't they, with how many cars they had out compared to, you know, Hyundai have had three cars out straight away, haven't they, from the start of the year. It's a difficult one, but yeah, Citroën sort of announcing publicly, possibly again, if this is what they have said before, that, you know, they're not really sort of paying much attention to the rest of this year, which, to be honest, is quite a common thing in other parts of motorsport. You know, if a team gets to a halfway point in the year and isn't doing well, they quite often do focus their efforts on the rest of the year. And in Formula One, that's the second time I've mentioned Formula One on a rally podcast. There should be some sort of forfeit
for that, really. Yellow card.
They've both been relevant examples, though.
Go on.
I've written myself out of it now. I don't even know if I can carry on with it, to be honest. But yeah, no, it's for Formula One teams, it is, you know, it's incredible how they work, in the sense that, you know, they are building, that they will have started building their 2018 cars already, or at least, you know, all of the teams will have at least planned them. So, you know, to be thinking that far ahead, you know, some of the bigger teams will be looking at 2019 as well. So maybe it's not the case in rallying that some of the teams are looking so far ahead. But, you know, I think it's quite a logical system of doing things for most motorsport outfits in different sports. So I don't think this is too much of a surprise.
Right. Are you buying into this Citroën kind of trying to almost just dismiss the rest of the year? I know, right, Jack's just said there that obviously they came in trying to get victories this year as opposed to trying to secure things, but clearly there is issues, and clearly they are trying to make changes, and albeit it's a very public test, it feels like, doesn't it, at times?
Yeah, is that Citroën just trying to diffuse a little bit of the attention that's been heaped upon them? Because like Jack said, I mean, you know, at the start of the year, they were saying, oh, we're not going for the championship this year. And it was one of them, well, really, why not? But they had obviously the least experienced team in terms of drivers at the start of the year. And, you know, I think we commented then it was unusual to see Citroën's approach, because they hadn't gone for two frontline drivers. They had just one frontline driver, and even that, a frontline driver that didn't have experience or big experience of all the rallies. So we didn't really expect them certainly to be fighting for the Manufacturers' Championship. So to come out and say, well, they're not really concentrating on this year, yeah, I think it's just they're trying to take a little bit of pressure off the team, and I'm sure they're very hopeful of better results. You know, we are seeing now them talk publicly about differential problems, publicly about damper problems, which I think we've known all along where the issues were. It sounds like they may be making some progress on the transmission side, but that there's still issues on the damper side. You know, and I saw a couple of comments, you can't just you can't just build a new damper overnight. Well, you know, the damper side of it, dampers are quite fundamental, and, you know, you can come up with a new spec of damper, but the fact that they're talking 2018 to rectify the suspension problems must mean there's some geometry issue, there's something physical on the car that they can't change until next year's homologation. So, you know, I think, again, that's why they're talking about 2018.
Were you surprised to see that it was still being done here? I read an article couple of days ago, it must have been somewhere, and I can't quote it kind of word for word, but it was saying something along the lines of the dampers are still being done in-house. It hasn't been subcontracted out to a Raiga or anybody like that. Citroën Racing are still developing their own damper.
No, I'm not at all surprised to read that, and therein lies some of the issues and some of the criticisms that, you know, the damper technology is old. You know, that's other people's comments. You know, there are a couple of generations behind some of the competition, and that's something that the French teams have always done. You know, if you go back to the days when Richard Burns went in there, and Richard didn't feel comfortable. I mean, it was Peugeot at the time, not Citroën, but Richard found it difficult to get comfortable in a 206 back in the day, and the French teams have always had quite a different way of working, particularly in the area of dampers. They've always done a lot of it in-house, maybe using components from one particular damper supplier, but then building them in-house. So not really surprised, but it does seem like they're going to have a big change of philosophy for next year.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now one of the world's leading motorsport online classified adverts and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop and pit equipment. We specialise in cataloguing, listing and selling large quantities of motorsport-related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Jack, a couple of other bits and pieces I wanted to mention as well with regards to Wales Rally GB. A route change. Unfortunately, there's issues up on it's not Pikes Peak, is it? Is it Pikes Peak? I think it is. It's certainly up towards Meherrin. With regards to a Lark's disease, Jack, we're now in the position where obviously this is still going to be ratified, I guess, by the FIA, or has this gone through now? Is this why you guys have ran the story?
Yeah, no, I think it's all sorted now. It's interesting, isn't it? It feels like this is the 832nd route for this year's Rally GB. I was mocking Andrew Kellett at the weekend on the Nicky Griff stages just for that fact. Obviously, I don't think any of the changes really anything they could go by. Obviously, they've added tear prints on the Thursday, which is just an extra chance for some of the sponsors to see some cars in action and for the cars to be sort of moving rather than just a stationary kind of ceremonial start. There's a tree disease up on Meherrin. I'm not even going to try and pronounce what it's actually called because it's pretty difficult. And the first three letters are PHY, so that's always going to be a throw off, even for people who can pronounce things properly like you, Tony Simpson.
I thought it was like just Lark's disease. Am I doing Lark's disease just a disservice there?
I don't know. Maybe the Latin name for that disease.
I'll tell you
is
what,
as
for a rally podcast, let's just not get bogged down in Lark's disease.
Yeah, that's fine. No problem. The whole thing was just an excuse to mock you, really. But I'll just carry on.
It's the whole story was to bury me on my own podcast. I love it.
Isn't that what me and Ryan are here for? I thought that was our specific role.
I guess so.
So that we've had the three changes now. We've got tear prints on Thursday. We've got the loss of Gwyd Deer on Sunday morning, which should allow the mechanics to get some rest on Saturday night. So that's some of the change. And then the tree disease issue in over Meherrin. So that's it's obviously not great, and these kind of things are not ideal for the event. But this is what rallying is, at a circuit. These kind of things aren't an issue. But when you take rallying out into the forest, you are exposed to things like this. So, as much as they are unusual, they can happen.
No, absolutely, absolutely. A bit of a story I picked up on today as well, that Mads Osberg boys might be doing Rally Germany in an R5 car. Are we surprised by that, Ryan Champion?
Well, he's camping at the minute, isn't he? So I'm not really surprised by anything. I saw him towing a caravan across some campsite. So,
was he flat out?
Well, no, he looked parked at the time. he was even tweeting about helping somebody else out of the campsite. Yeah.
There you go. That's what happens. I think Mads is probably quite a helpful guy.
Yeah, I mean, I've spent some...
I'd like to go camping. Mate, people listening, if you'd like to go camping with Mads Osberg, drop us a line. I'm not saying we can make it happen. I just think it'd be an interesting experience with Mads. That's all. We'll ask the question. I'm not promising. There you go. Jack, have you got any ins to go camping with anyone?
No, not really. I don't think it's a massive surprise here. Mads being out in R5 car, does own one and competes in the Norwegian Championship with it. So, obviously it is maybe a little bit surprising when you consider that most of the WRC events he's done in the past few years have been in a WRC car. But maybe he's just stepping down a little bit to get a bit more familiarity with the R5 or something along those lines. It'll be interesting to find out what's behind that story, to be honest.
Would be absolutely. Let's see whether we can do something on it. A couple of congratulations as well. Anton Lesage, who we will get back on, won the latest round of the Canadian Rally Championship, and the folks on the Rally Australia Championship is all getting very, very interesting. There's 3 points now separating Molly and I said Neil Bates. Then it's not Neil Bates, it's Harry Bates, and I think it's Eli Evans, or certainly somebody in Eli Evans's car anyway. So congratulations on those guys. We are going to get somebody back on from the Rally Australia Championship very, very soon. We might get Molly and Harry. I did promise that last time they were on. Anyway, boys, we're quickly heading towards any other business before we cross over to our middle sections, and then we come back in the final section with Seb Marshall. So, Jack Benyon, have you got any other business this week? And is it BRC related?
I have, and it isn't.
Okay.
I did notice, Ryan's probably seen this already, but my two favourite things in the world are Sebastian Loeb and a Peugeot 306 Maxi, and he's doing Rally Dakar later on in the year. So,
wow.
as much as my throat is going, I am also partially speechless.
Okay.
At the prospect of that happening.
I'm genuinely excited. And now, folks, we were going to do the draw, by the way, for Dirt 4, which we have got a copy away to give away, thanks to the guys at Codemasters. We are going to be doing it next week because we're going to do something slightly different with it. So there you go. But we do thank the people who got involved via Patreon. Anyway, 306 Maxi is my favourite car on Dirt 4. Have you checked it out yet, Ry? Have you had a giggle on it?
Since I've not even slept since we last recorded a podcast, then
No, that's a no.
I'm gonna open it on air. There we go. I've actually opened the box now. But that's as far as I've got, unfortunately.
And Jack Benyon is still missing a PlayStation 4 to play on.
No one's having one yet, so.
No. Do we need to crowdfund again? Do we need to get this going? Hashtag PS4 for Jack.
I think there's far better things out there to crowdfund in the world for than for me to have a PlayStation, to be honest. But it would be nice.
You were up on Nicky Grist stages. Obviously, we were doing the national section of it, Jack, but you were there covering the BRC. Just, it's a unique event. Obviously, gravel one day, tarmac the next. You were there covering, obviously, the whole event, not only for the cadets, but obviously for the main field as well. What did you leave the event on Sunday night feeling?
They always face struggles with that event, based on, you know, how much involvement the military have on Epin and things like that. You know, some of the smaller Epin events have a similar kind of thing, but don't get the publicity that, you know, the likes of a BRC event would have. For all listeners who are not in the UK and don't really understand what I'm talking about, Epin Ranges is where the Sunday stages take place. It's a military training ground in Wales. So the military do exercises while the rally's on, and, you know, before and after the rally. So different things like getting into the recce to put the chicanes up can be difficult for the event organisers, because the you know, if the army are out shooting guns and stuff, then, you know, it's not really safe for marshals to be out putting chicanes up. So they face a lot of challenges, and, you know, that can be frustrating for competitors. And I know the recce and specifically the chicanes on the recce weren't, you know, it was a bit of a sticking point for some of the drivers. Once the event got underway, I think, you know, the dust caused a bit of trouble, as you will have known, Tony. But I think in general, from the guys I spoke to, they'd rather have dust than massive, great big ruts like they had the year before. So Saturday, I thought, went much better than it did the year before. And I think the adding 2-minute intervals between the top 10 cars for the afternoon was a good idea to kind of stop all the BRC boys whinging about dust, and that did my head a lot of good as well, because every time I opened a car door, I didn't have to listen to someone whinging about how bad the dust was. And then Sunday, Epping, one of my favourite places.
The dust was really bad.
Well, yeah, I know. I only had 160 people telling me how bad the dust was, so, you know, it wasn't. Well, actually, if I probably spoke to the co-drivers as well, it's probably closer to 500, but. Yeah, that's fine. Don't worry about it.
How many co-drivers are in a rally car? So there was 160 people, and with the co-drivers, well, there was 500.
Well, yeah, but then they go and tell their service crews, and I have to listen to all those go on as well. And, you know,
right?
Know
does he sound like he's whinging as opposed to people whinging about? Well, is it just me? I'm getting a headache listening to him.
I'm just thinking of that sketch that's gone around on social media again this week about the complaining racing driver.
And it's good, that, isn't it?
For anybody who hasn't seen that, I think we should tweet that from the Absolute Rally account, and then everybody will know what we're on about. Just replace problems for dust, and then
let's do that.
Okay, dig it out, Ryan. I'll get it regurgitated, as it were. So there you go. So Frederick Arling, of course, now leading the BRC. Jack, is he a shoo-in now? Because all the jokers, I think, have been played by the major players, haven't they? So, you know, championship wise, does it need Frederick to almost, you know, not finish now? I think if he steady away and he kind of top three finishes on the last 3 points scored on opportunities, which of course is two rallies, it is, isn't it?
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? You know, on Sunday morning, I thought, you know, Bosch should run away with the championship looking at it, because he was playing his joker and he was leading the event and looking very strong. Obviously, he retired with a fuel-related issue on Sunday morning, so that really threw a spanner in the works of things. And you know, Frederick's had trouble earlier in the year as well with the rock through the radiator on the Scottish rally, and then he had a crash. So No, it's the one thing you can say about this year, whether you know, whatever you say about how the BRC is getting on at the minute, is that the competition's been fairly close, and there's always been two drivers battling out at the top, and quite often three if you include Tom Cave, who was really quick in the Highland Eye when it was on the stages. So it's been really interesting, and you know, yes, on paper, to answer your question, it looks like it's Frederick Collins to lose, but given what we've seen at the start of the year, I don't think anything can happen. I think Keith Cronin was very, very quick on the Ulster last year, and you know, only missed out by a late gearbox this year. I think he would have been very, very close to Alvin Evans by the end of the event. Obviously, Alvin was driving to win the title, so you know, there was bits to take into account there, but the point is Keith was very quick there, so he should go well there. And then we've got the Isle of Man after that, which is also, don't forget, two rounds. So they take the first leg of the event and award points, and the second leg of the event and award points. So there's still plenty of drama to unfold, I think.
I'm sure I said I was 3 points scoring opportunities on two events before.
I wasn't saying Tony Simpson, don't forget. I was just saying in general, yeah, don't forget.
Have you got, obviously you've done your any other business, you're giddy about Sebastian Loeb driving a 306 Maxi on Rally de Bay. Ryan Champion, I'm assuming yours could be Goodwood related.
Yeah, I suppose you should do a roundup from Goodwood. I was actually thinking, yeah, we never did have Jack Benyon's roundup from Rally Barbados. He gave us the big build-up and then, you know, and then just left us hanging. So we maybe should just mention that Geoffrey Panton won that, and we maybe should get Geoffrey Panton on at some point and ask about his exploits on Rally GB back in the day. But yeah, Goodwood Festival of Speed, back to camping again, aren't we, actually? So that was me camping for a week.
Yeah, but you do posh camping. You do posh camping.
Well, you've got to have a rig, haven't you? Yeah. So, yeah, great weekend at the Goodwood Festival of Speed on the rally stage. So I was there with the Subaru, also lucky enough to drive an ex-Colin McRae Legacy and an ex-Gardemeister Octavia WRC on the stage. So great fun to drive those cars. But it's just an epic weekend, and not just looking around the rally cars, but also the race cars as well, when you see the likes of Emerson Fittipaldi driving James Hunt's McLaren, for example. But you know, even on the rally stage, where else do you see a Volkswagen Beetle, a Citroen Visa, and, you know, a Fiesta World Rally Car, an Impreza World Rally Car? There was a chap there in a gorgeous original Martini Lancia Delta S4 that's probably worth over £1 million. Wow. And, you know, he was taking it fairly careful on the rally stage, but I don't blame him.
No, absolutely.
A lovely original ex-Safari, Lancia Stratos, you know, a host of 6R4s and Subarus and everything else. So it is a fantastic mix of cars. It really is.
Back next year?
Hopefully, as long as we're invited.
Of course.
Can't take these things for granted, but it's such a nice event to be part of that I certainly wouldn't say no if it was invited.
There you go. Happy days. My only other business is very, very simple. Well done, M Sport, for building an R2 car, which basically made me wet myself. Just thought I'd put it out there.
That's three mentions of F1 and at least two mentions of you wetting yourself on this podcast, which is, that's some way to announce ourselves back on the scene, isn't it?
Well, it is, to be fair. Impromptu wee wee's. That's I never ever thought I'd mention that on a rally podcast, but there you go. No, I was that excited. I had a little wee wee. So there you go. So well done, M Sport. Cracking job, cracking effort, and an absolute joy. And thank you for making a grown man go childlike behind a steering wheel of a car. There you go. That's it for this section, folks. We're going to go over to talk to Jonathan Bennett-Evans now, a piece that we did with, obviously, Ryan and I last week when we were over there. Then we're going to go over to Gus Greensmith, and then you'll hear us very, very shortly with Seb Marshall, of course, who's now Hayden Padden's co-driver, who's going to be telling us all about the experience of being on a podium WRC for the first time, certainly on WRC, the main field, as opposed to WRC 2 or juniors and things like that. So we're going to have Seb talking to us all about that, and obviously how the relationship's developing. So sit back, relax, enjoy that bit, and we'll be back very shortly.
This is Absolute Rally, Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
as Ryan and I said at the top of the programme, we're at Sweet Lamb, and we've often spoke about Sweet Lamb. We've talked about the amphitheatre, the specialness of it and everything else. And I thought it makes sense because John Bennett Evans came down, obviously, to open the gate, let us in, take our money, take the mick out of Ryan a little bit. And he's with us now. So, Jonathan Bennett Evans, welcome to Absolute Rally. Why and what is so special, do you think, about Sweet Lamb? It's your place. Maybe you can tell us a little bit how Sweet Lamb came about.
Sweet Lamb came about. We had a customer came here one day and asked, could he use the roads that were on the farm? It turned out to be that it happened to be for a Lancia Stratus. And that was the first car we had, was back in the late 80s. And after that, then came a couple of Metros, and after that, really, the Sierra Cosworth. And from then on, testing really kicked in, and we made more roads, and more testing came.
Did that come from work teams, or was it just people who just needed to find a little bit of road? How the kind of, because it's become, you know, obviously the legendary workshop now is all the signatures and stuff like that. Mine's not there, probably Ryan's is, but mine's not there. You know, this picture of which, and we'll tweet a picture out later on with some of the signatures on, but you know, all these famous drivers now that kind of see it as the place to test in the UK.
In the early 90s, it was there was more works teams about in the UK, so and they were running two or three cars a team, so all these drivers were turning up back in the day, and the works teams were coming. Then there was more works teams in the UK. Now a lot of them are in Europe, so we don't see so much nowadays of them. We're seeing more of the British Championship guys.
I was about to say, because I guess, is it fair to say, and I'll ask Ryan this, because Ryan's been around this a lot longer, that, you know, there's a lot more kind of, I suppose, professional teams now, isn't there, right? Running cars in the UK, as opposed to kind of running out the back of an estate car. So this coming to places like this is imperative.
Yeah, obviously, as John's just said, there's a lot less works teams around. And obviously, when the British Championship was in its heyday of works teams with 8-10 works teams, then they were all testing regularly. But what we see now is that the private teams are all at a much higher level. You know, for anybody who's seen the CA1 team set up, we've talked to Martin Wilkinson a few times, and you see CA1 in a service area, and it could be a works team. So the private teams are at a very high level now. A lot of them run by works engineers, as it were. So you certainly see a lot more of the private teams testing than probably what they did in the past.
John, you also did a little bit yourself in the past. I seem to remember an Escort Cosworth, and there's pictures of it even around here still. where did you get to where you kind of stopped rallying and then you kind of ran this facility? Because Sweet Lamb is so much more than a testing facility, isn't it?
Yeah, we do a lot of other things here as well, but rallying is still one of the main things. And because we were testing a lot and seeing all the rally cars, I got into rallying really, and so I did a bit myself. I retired back in 97, so it's a long time ago now, but no, they were really good days, and they were, yeah, I would love to do it all again, really.
It's, again, we talk about amphitheatres and rallying and some of the special places. This place in the dark, Wales Rally GB.
Oh, yeah.
It is something special, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, like Richard Byrne says, it was just incredible to come over the crest out of Havering and see all the spectators and lights at night and the fireworks going off. And I think, you know, he nailed it, really, saying it was just somewhere so special in the world to see that. And it's a shame we don't have the night stages anymore.
I know. I've come over here in the night a long, long time ago. And, it, you know, even when we run at the back of the field, the tingles you get when you come down and you see people. And the last thing you want to do is make an arse of yourself, I think, normally. Well,
it's called the Bowl, and it is an amphitheatre, really. So it lends itself to the spectators and to the cars. And, of course, they can come over the crest and look down. You're driving down into it. Instead of going through it, you're sort of coming down into it and out the other side. So that's a special bit, I think, especially at night and daytime as well.
Now, we've seen some high profile incidents on Rally GB in Sweet Lamb. I think one of the focuses rolled Mikko Hirvonen, probably just in front of us there. We saw Latvala with the stuck the Polo in the ditch a couple of years back and got it well stuck. But tell us about some of the testing incidents, because you've had McCrae's, Sciences, Kankinen's, everybody's been here. There's got to be one or two testing stories.
Yeah, all the pro drivers have been pretty good. I don't know if I should mention any names, really.
Yeah, why not? They're not listening.
Martin Rowe did go off here when he was testing for Renault, and they were doing the Cambrian and Robbie Head, and they both came and tested, and they both went off on that test. And the big boss from Renault was flying in the next day. And I don't think he was too impressed when they were all a bit bumped up. So they did struggle that evening to try and get him back looking like Renault's.
Yeah.
But so that was one incident. We've had we don't have many crashes. We've been very lucky. People are sensible, really.
Yeah, I think it's the fear factor. I came here a long time ago and I brought my now soon-to-be missus with us, and she'd been in a car a few times, but she'd never experienced drops before. And that's one thing that Sweet Lamb has plenty of. And I guess on rally stages, normally trees are covering them. So, you know, rally drivers normally are not looking at the drops, but here there's nowhere to look other than just keep looking ahead, really.
No, it's just you don't want to go around following Ryan around, you know. He's always very, very close to the edges. He's a big one for cutting as well, you know. So, you know, he's a danger to himself, that boy.
Can you remember your first time coming here, Ryan?
I think my first time through Sweet Lamb would probably be on the Plains. I think the Plains rallies in the mid-90s, the Plains used to come through, used to use the water splash.
94, 95.
Yeah, and I think I actually have a picture coming through the Ford in 94 when I was in a 205. And
2 years I won it, I think.
You just dropped one. Because you had practice the stages.
I was going to say, do you know when people say quite literally your own backyard? This is quite literally your own backyard. Yeah.
Well, if you don't get a good stage in your own backyard, it's not looking good from my point of view.
And then at that time, you know, Sweet Lamb was used on most of the rallies, because the Rally of Wales, the first round of the British Championship, we used to come through here. The RAC, or the Network Q as it was at the time, then that came through here. So, you know, I guess how many rallies? Six times a year?
Five or six a year was coming through. Yeah, the Plains, the Midland back in the day. The Vauxhall Rally of Wales, a two-day event as it was back then. And the Rally GB, it was hot back then, you know. Rallying was, nowadays it's more tied down to smaller areas.
Are you surprised, genuinely though, because we've just been talking about the facilities, obviously the washing facilities and stuff like that, and this is something people keep kind of talking about in rallying, that perhaps you don't get approached a little bit more these days to have some more rallies run through here?
No, I think I would like to see it going in another direction. I think rallying needs to change a little bit in trying to put smaller events on, getting spectators more involved, and getting the local communities and towns and councils involved with rallying. And maybe rally sprints, or as they're called, rally time trials, they're called now, I think. Things like that, to bring a bit more excitement back, just so people can go for a day's watching in one place.
Yeah,
and instead of travelling around and not really knowing where the rally starts, finishes, what woods it's going to go to, they can come here and have a whole day's entertainment for a fiver.
Yeah. Well, we've already been out. We're going to talk about what happened when Ryan and I went out a little bit later on in the programme. But Rally GB this year is still using bits and pieces of Sweet Lamb. Is that something which you pride yourself in, the fact that GB keeps on coming back here and you're still part of the event?
Oh, definitely. I mean, GB is, it's been coming here for many years, so we're really lucky to have it here, really. I think the spectators like it because they can see so much. And the atmosphere on a good rally is excellent. So hopefully it'll keep coming, yeah.
Fantastic. Listen, John, thanks so much for allowing us to come down today with our little rally car and me and Ryan to loosely record a feature for our programme. But we really, as I say, we've spoke so many times about Sweet Lamb, it just made more sense to have you tell our listeners a little bit about it too. So
no,
thank you.
No problem at all. You're welcome to come back anytime, and I hope the event goes well for you at the weekend.
Thanks very much. Cheers, Jonathan. Folks, we'll be back after this break.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now, one of the world's leading motorsport online classified adverts and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop and pit equipment. We specialise in cataloguing, listing and selling large quantities of motorsport-related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. It's another unique moment where we're actually sat with the person as opposed to speaking to them on the phone. And we're sat in, can we call it your office, Gus?
No, definitely not my office.
Not your office, no. We're sat in an office
We're sat in an office. It's somewhere hidden away, is the best way to describe it. I'm with Gus Greensmith. Hello, Gus.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. Now, we're recording this a few days after you got back from Poland, of course. Yeah. We're on our holiday this week. But I was coming to see you and thought it would be a good time to actually sit down and talk to you. Firstly, I sat in the car park waiting for you. I'm not saying that you were late. I was early, and I will get the penalty for that for early arrival at the control.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Yeah, it's happened to me many times. And I've just watched your onboard of, I'm not even going to try and pronounce the stage on Poland.
Goldapp.
Goldapp.
Easy.
Goldapp, okay. Which you were fastest on.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Thank you. To my knowledge, that is your first fastest stage time WRC2.
It was the second of the rally. I think I got a total of three in the rally.
Wow.
The first one was on Friday on the second stage of the loop, and then this one was midway through Saturday, and then I had another one on the Sunday. So yeah, it was a good step forward. Again, in Portugal, we were kind of fighting at the sharp end, and now we were setting the fastest times at the sharp end. So again, another little step forward.
Did that come, is that come where you thought it was going to come? Is this the point of the season where you thought that was going to come, or were you just still, because obviously you started off the season by your own mission, Sweden, you drove to finish, Portugal, probably similar again. Where was the expectation level for come Poland?
Not here is what it wasn't. It was not here at all. I think my kind of ambition for the year was to be at the point I'm at now. Possibly, it would have been ideal to have been at Wales. That was the idea, that I would start really mixing it at the front at Wales after a year of learning. But it's nowhere near where I thought it was going to be. We keep making huge step forwards every rally, but the effort's been ridiculous, especially from like Craig, Christian, everyone. It's been non-stop, and it's been literally dedicating every second of my waking life to try and find little bits and just studying things and doing things differently and finding new ways to do things. So
how do you do it? Because, you know, seat time, everything is seat time. Everyone talks about seat time. We all acknowledge that the more you're in a rally car, of course, you're going to drive it better. It goes without saying. When you're away from the rally car, the discipline, obviously, to keep focused is one which quite clearly I can see behind your eyes now. It's quite odd, sat across the table from you like this. But I can see, obviously, the determination and everything's there. What did you get given time? Because obviously we spoke about this before. Christian Solberg, of course, former WRC driver, and he still does bits and pieces now. He does rallycross and things like that, and driver coaching and things like that. He's your mentor. Does he give you tasks to go away and work at? Is that how it works? You get homework?
I wouldn't call it homework. I'm pretty much living the dream, in my opinion. So nothing's a bloody homework for me. It's a bit different. We kind of, at the end of every rally, we kind of debrief and we go, what was the bad things? What were the okay things? What were the positive things? What are the things that really need changing? If something was really wrong, how do we change it to improve it? And basically, at the end of every rally, that's what we do. We sit down for a couple of hours and we just run through every little detail. Even how we do the first pass of a run on a test, we would do all that. But it's quite hard at the moment, because even though I've done a couple of rallies, I've not really had much time in the seat this year. I've only had one test before every rally. That's all I've done this year. When you look at some of the other drivers, they've had a lot more time in the seat. So I've had to be incredibly efficient with how I'm using my time in the car.
Do you think that's helped? I know that sounds like a ridiculous thing, bearing in mind I'm just contradicting what I've just said about seat time. But the fact that you know you've got a limited amount of time, so you have to be so focused to be on it, rather than, you know, throwing away that last run and just go, we'll just go out and have a blast on the last run and stuff like, you knowing that you've got to make the most out of every run you do on that test.
Yeah, it's hard, especially when the road, especially in Poland, was getting really rough at the end of the day. And Christian was like, no, we haven't used the allocation. Go and try something new. So in the end of the day, we found a really nice setup that I was comfortable with. And I was basically saying to Christian, is it worth going out? Because if I damage the car, and you know the rule, you don't do that one last run.
That
is the rule of rallying. And Christian was like, no, we don't have the time. We have to go and try things. You've got a limited amount of time and seat time. Just try new things. So we tried different suspension, went stiffer on the rear, for example, changed the preloads, changed the diffs, just to try little things, really, just to find little bits. And basically, when I come to a rally the next time, I don't need to try that because I already have it engraved in my memory that I know what's going to happen. So it's being efficient with your time, and also just looking away at the rally and just planning everything properly. Everything, Craig drills it into me, and I'm still not as routined as he wanted, but everything has to be routine, because in Poland, I left the boot open. That's the reason I lost the time on the first day to Ole and Pontus, because I made a silly mistake. I said, we got the helmets through the car, because I said, oh, we'll get it because of the rain. I said, I'll get it before we leave. left the boot open, lost 16 seconds because I couldn't hear Craig. Things like that is just about being so precise and efficient. You've got to plan these things, and it's basically spotting what's wrong and then making the difference into the next one.
You'll never do it again.
No.
That's the thing. Sometimes you have to go through things to kind of go, well, I'll never do that again. And that's just that everything in life is like that, unfortunately. But I find it fascinating the fact that you didn't think you were going to be at this point. And you've just talked about the work you're doing with Craig and the work you're doing with Christian and things like that. Have you got to a point now with your notes? Again, before we started doing this, I genuinely sat in the car park, watched your in-car, and I've been asking you questions about your notes. And, you know, everybody's notes are personal to them, especially when you write your own notes. Of course they are. There was different things I asked you with regards to the letter V, as it were. Now, that was a new one on me, and I've watched too much in card, as my missus would probably say, because I sit there just watching it for hours on end. The letter V is a very, very, it was a very, very easy answer. I went, what's the letter V? And you told me,
it's the shape of a corner.
There you go. That's it. That's all it was.
I think my biggest problem in rallying since I started was finding a pace note system that worked. I've tried three different systems in 3 years and they've never worked. None of them. I could never click with any of them. And I didn't have the confidence to push. As soon as I got Craig in the car, we went out and did got in my car, we went and drove some roads, and he could see me just like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And then sure enough, from about, God knows, about 1,000 miles of wrecking over in Wales, or near roads near his house, we managed to find a system that really works for me. And I have, and to be honest, to be fair, I only put the onboard up because I thought it's an okay stage. I could still see a lot of time in the stage, but I thought, I've not really post onboard, so I'll put this one up. Because I don't particularly like people hearing my pace note system. I've spent that long trying to get it right. I don't really want people to pick things up wrong. So I've spent a lot of time doing that, but I thought, might as well put it up because I enjoyed
it. I was just about to say, when you stick in a time like that, mate, and it's a drive like that, you have to show people. Surely you've got to show people. How is the, you know, in some ways I see you as a bit of a poster boy for M Sport as well, because of course, you know, we've known each other for quite a long time. I remember you driving the R1 car, then obviously going to the R2, the 1600 and the R2T and things like that. So you're kind of going through that M Sport system. Do you feel that's been a benefit to you going through, kind of, because obviously you're relatively working with the same people, but albeit slightly upgraded? You know, Andrew Wheatley is a massive supporter of One Make Championships and stuff like that because of his background. And I know Andrew was quite vocal in very early on in your career, and obviously he's still there now.
Yeah, no, Andrew was actually the person that got me into an R1 in the first place, because I said to him, I think it was at the BRC Media Day or something, and it was when we were deciding what we were going to do. And I jumped in it was actually the first time I jumped in a car with Elfin, and he was driving the R2. And I was like, oh my God, I want this car. It's got a sequential pot. I was like, give me this. And Andrew turned around to me and went, no, you're not having that. I was like, you're supposed to be selling me this. And he just went, no, you're not having it. And I was like, oh, for God's sake. And then my dad was like, no, we can start R1. So, and to be fair, it's been brilliant. You take it a step at a time. You rush it. You have to make a step back to go forward again. If you take it a step at a time progressively, then you can constantly make improvements, and that's the best way to do it to me. 2 years in R2 was great. First year was a second year was a good step forward, and then this year's been a huge step forward in terms of everything. So everything's beginning to come together now. I just need to keep cracking on, just finding more little bits to improve on.
So the rest of the calendar for the year looks like for you, what events have you got left in your programme?
We've got Finland, Germany, Spain and Wales. So we've got another four rallies.
Four great events.
Yes, four fantastic events. And Finland's going to be interesting. I've never finished Finland, so for me that's a similar kind of thing to Sweden. But obviously now I'm becoming more comfortable with the car, with the pace notes. I can drive at a much faster pace than I was at the beginning of the year, so that'll be good. Germany, you say Panzerplatte to me, gets me in the heart. I cannot wait. It's my favourite stage in the world, so I'll be giving it some through there. Just hopefully not too much and ending up in Hinkelstein. So.
No, you don't want to be doing that.
Yeah. So then Spain should be good. Get some more experience, and then Wales, depending how the year's gone up to that point, I will. I don't know, I might give it a go there, but we'll see.
There's Wales, you know, again, I've always been quite giddy about Wales because it was the first proper rally I went to watch and things like that. And it was called, you know, the RAC rally back then. Obviously, it means something completely different now. Does Wales still have that that, does it still grab you as your home event? Bearing in mind, you've done so much in such a short period of time. You it's only really probably in 20 years time when you look back at this period will you realise, you know, how much you've done. Does your home event still grab you the way it does?
Yeah, it does, and it kind of doesn't for me, because I go there and it's home, it's 45 minutes from my house, it's great, I can just drive across it, and if I wanted to go back to a house at night and see my dogs, I'd go back and if it was my choice I would.
But
Wales is home. It's, everyone speaks English, driving on the left hand side of the road, the right hand side of the road, not the wrong.
No.
And then it's, the stages are familiar, some of the stages there are incredible. I'm not 100% sure of the way they're doing them this year, but some of the stages in there are still brilliant.
Yeah,
Brennig, I think, is one of the best stages in the world.
I hate that stage.
I think it's brilliant. There's so many things.
I think I balked you on that stage about 3 years ago, and you ended up behind me after a problem. I apologise again to that. It was the last stage of the day. I think it was before we went to.
It's a proper rally. It's really good, and it does feel like home. But for me, Portugal is home. That is
Portugal's home. It's not a bad home to have.
Portugal's, whenever I go to Portugal, I just go into it. It almost feels like a holiday. It doesn't feel like you're working. It's my favourite place for rallying in the world. I don't know why, but then when you go to Wales, that is really your home.
So Finland, what happens between, we're kind of 4 days after Poland as we record this, what happens between now and Finland? Are you, obviously, you've had a little bit of a tweak at the back, so you're going to have a rest up for a day or two before you start doing anything silly? Or
I think I'll go and get my vaccine too pretty soon, because I need to get back in the gym.
Yeah.
And then we've got a couple of weeks, just basically the recce video came out from the organisers, so study them, have a look at what you think, make some descriptions. And then I'm going to do the Auto Glim rally in leaving about a week.
Okay.
To do that. It was either that or a test. So I thought I'd rather do it on the stage with a fresh set of notes and test things. So that seemed like a really good idea to do that.
Is that with the M Sport car, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then back to Finland then. So there's all little bits. And to be fair, I think this is going to be the busiest period of my rallying career over this, like from Poland to really Germany. So.
Fantastic. Well, listen, Gus, thank you for allowing us to hide away in this office in Gus Greensmith's world. It's been good to see you face-to-face for a change.
Yeah.
And you are our man in WRC2, so we will catch up with you after Finland. And good luck with your preparation. Hope the back gets better soon.
Sure it will. Thank you.
Cheers, mate.
This is Absolute Rally. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally, and it's good to have a friend of the show. I still think he's a friend of the show, and he's Seb Marshall. Hello, sir.
Hello, Tony. Hello, Ryan. Good to be here. Thank you for asking me on.
It's good to have you on, because you've achieved giddy heights. We weren't sure whether we were still going to be able to get you, because you know you were a lowly non podium finishing WRC co-driver last time we spoke, and now you've been on a WRC podium. Has the champagne finally gone out of the hair and out of the eyes?
It has. It took a while, and I'm not overly looking forward to seeing what my suit's going to be like if they've managed to wash it all out of that. But my champagne shower was a very nice experience. But yeah, all good now.
I would have thought Hyundai would have issued you a new race suit. I didn't think things were that hard.
Well, perhaps. I'll find out in a few weeks, I guess.
Good man. Now, did this, you know, we've had Hayden on many times. Hayden's, you know, an open book, and we that's why we love Hayden, to be honest with you, when he comes on. This change happened a little bit earlier. Obviously, you guys, we know, were working towards this. Did you set yourself goals and targets of where you wanted to be as a parent, and did this come about a little bit sooner than that, or was it where Hayden felt he was going to come on strong and these particular events?
Well, I think obviously, as you know, the original plan was for me to take over from the co-driving seat in Germany, with Finland being the last rally for John. Obviously, that got brought forward due to sort of his recurring hip injury after Argentina. So, it was kind of in advance of when we'd obviously planned the switch, but But like I said, we've been working together for over nearly a year now. I've been doing all the pre-event testing in the background. So, we felt as though we were sort of well prepared in that regard. As for whether we'd sort of set targets, not specifically. I mean, certainly not in sort of Portugal and Sardinia, the first two rallies we did together. Hayden had obviously had a difficult start to the year, so we were just focusing on having sort of a clean Friday, which can then set you up for a good rally. And obviously that didn't quite go to plan in Portugal with leading the rally, a couple of stage wins, but then we had the electrical gremlins. And then in Sardinia, as most people probably know, again, good start on Friday, leading the rally. And then we sort of had our minor indiscretion. I think we were very much just going into it with the sort of attitude of keep it clean, drive to a comfortable rhythm. And I think as we sort of proved in Poland, the end result, if it all comes together, we'll be there.
Which is exactly, what you've got to be aiming for. So I thought Ryan was going to come in then, to be honest with you. Ryan was kind of sat there with kind of bated breath with all his questions, and then he's disappeared on me.
No, I was just sat quietly, I was just waiting my turn. I thought when you talked about giddy heights at the start, you were referring to the fact that Seb Marshall is a tall man. Well, he always has been a tall man, but anyway. Seb, I mean, obviously great for you to finally get your chance really at the front of WRC. And I mean, like you said, you've been working behind the scenes with Hayden. This is a fairly smooth transition as these things go. It's not like you've been thrown in at the deep end, but has there been any sort of slight surprises when it actually comes to working together on a rally?
Nothing particularly. It's probably a bit of a boring answer, really. But no, I mean, obviously, like you say, testing is one thing, and I've done, I think even before the first rally, up to 15 days in the car this year with Hayden. But we had the opportunity, thanks to Hyundai, to do the San Remo rally in the R5 car just in the back end of March. So that sort of already took a little bit of the pressure off in terms of approaching things that you do on a rally that you wouldn't do on a test. Stupid stuff like, do you want a countdown at the start of the stage, or how protocol works in terms of in going into service or road section, who's doing the tyre pressures, who's doing the helmets. So we'd kind of gone through all that in a rally environment in San Remo. So that was great. Many sort of preparation for the WRCs, which meant that it was a little bit more relaxed. And so that we could focus purely on what we were supposed to be in terms of the competition on the stages. So no, there's not been any sort of surprises. We get on very well outside of the car as well. So it's been a very smooth transition in that sense.
Now, one thing that Hayden does maybe slightly different to some of the other drivers is on the recce. His recce involves a lot of different coloured tank tape, doesn't it?
He's got his steering wheel sort of taped up with different numbers going around each side. I think it's something that a few drivers have adopted over the years now. It's not a hard and fast kind of you turn the wheel sort of to 2 o'clock and that's a fifth gear, five right or something. But it's more of a guide that he uses, but it does help for kind of situations where there's lots going on during a particularly technical stage, for example. It removes some of the guesswork. It's not a kind of definite that's the corner, but it's right, okay, well, it's in that ballpark, and then you can perhaps focus on other aspects of the corner as well, and then obviously on the second pass check all that. That said, it's been quite nice that it's for the first time I've been going to some of these recces and having notes already written from previous years. So that's been a nice experience, to be honest. Less sort of scrappy handwriting that needs tidying up on the night of a recce. But no, you're right. It's something he works very hard for on the recce and seems to work well.
And it's something we do talk about quite frequently, but I mean, more than ever nowadays, there's a huge amount of work goes into a WRC event away from the rally, isn't there, in terms of onboards, in terms of pace notes. People prepare for an event like never before.
Yeah, they do. I mean, obviously, you tend to work sort of one sort of step ahead. Hayden will be working on Finland notes. I'm already sort of almost finished sorting out Germany stuff. little prepping them from the organisers. Yeah, they produce their rally guide saying, right, we're going to use this stage from such and such kilometres from 2015, this part from 2016. And obviously I've got to knit all that together and then deliver that to Hayden with the sort of, okay, these are the videos you need to watch. These are the stages. It's a part of it. From that obviously works towards the recce and the pace notes, but then there's equally a huge amount of preparation we're doing in regards to the testing. Both, you know, obviously you may or may not know that a lot of the rallies are linked together, for example. So you have to sort of pick your differential choice several rallies in advance of where the event you might come to. So there's lots of things to consider here and. Yeah, it's not just a case of rock up and drive. There's a huge amount of prep from both driver, co-driver, and the team as well to make sure all these things are working so that you're not compromised on an event potentially from 3 months previously or something. So, there's a lot that goes into it, and it's perhaps hard to explain exactly, but there we go. I've done my best.
Now, obviously, your involvement with the Hyundai team came alongside Kevin Abringen. You've been working for the last few years with Kevin, and Kevin was sort of seemed to be part of the Hyundai setup. It seemed like he was growing into a bigger role within Hyundai. Has it been quite surprising to see Kevin leave the team and move on to a different program?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, towards the end of last year, it became apparent that with the new 2017 cars, that Hyundai weren't in a position to be able to run four of those cars, and that they didn't want to run sort of a 2016 model in the championship from, you know, various commercial and marketing reasons. So I think, yeah, obviously, it was unfortunate in terms of timing, perhaps, from Kevin's point of view, that it just, having got, like I say, a foot in the door, that the opportunity didn't progress. But he's still doing some little bits of work for the team in terms of rollouts and shakedowns of the cars. So he's not gone completely, but obviously, yeah, in the public eye, it's he's sort of moved on to various other bits. And obviously had a fantastic rally a couple of weeks out in Ypres. So I was delighted to see that. It's one of the few rallies, well, probably the rally that he wanted to win more than any other. So we gave it a good shot in the Peugeot a couple of years ago. But yeah, nice to see him take the victory there.
Fantastic. Now, we've just been talking, of course, R5 and things like that. You now are in the big leagues, Seb, I think it's fair to say. It doesn't get much bigger at the moment. And you and Hayden were out in an R5 car last weekend. Does that almost feel quite pedestrian now? I know it sounds ridiculous to say because I've watched some external footage and it's just absolutely, you know, Hayden's absolutely on it beyond belief. But having been in the 2017 car now, does life become a little bit more pedestrian in an R5 car?
Political answer is probably something different, but yes, it does, to be honest. We did the shakedown of the event this time last week, and I think it didn't help having come from Poland, which is obviously so incredibly quick as a rally. Jumping onto into the R5 car on tarmac, it was still a quick rally that we were doing, but you know, we both got to the end of the 4.5k shakedown stage, and we're like, all right, okay, well. We got a lot more time to think about things, haven't you? So, yeah, it was a bit of a shock, but it was still a great experience for us to get a bit more mileage in on tarmac. And the R5 car, we had a couple of small issues throughout the weekend, but still managed to win half the stages on the rally. So, I think we showed that, yeah, it's still a very competitive formula, even if it's not quite as fast as a WRC17 car.
Fantastic. Now, if I can just take you back to Poland and I can take you back to that podium, the thing that dreams are made of for a young Seb Marshall growing up. But the big question is, Jack Benny's not with us at the moment. He wanted to know, he left some questions. He wanted to know how it compared with fixing and putting up your first radiator in your house. He wanted to know what the comparison was between a WRC podium and radiator fixing, or
there's no comparison at all. You know,
yeah, I thought that
home
yeah.
plumbing was what my dreams are made of.
Yeah, I can imagine growing up, you had your own little tool set and everything else, and you're like, one day, One day I'm going to put that radiator up there on that wall.
You know, as a kid, I was actually really good at taking stuff apart, less so at putting it back together. But
just as a kid, because I'm really good at taking things apart now and not so well, good at putting them back together.
I've learned my lesson slightly, Ryan, and I just don't try taking it apart so much anymore now. But no, Jack would be pleased to know that, well, it's not the season for radiators, is it? So I'm just attacking the jungle that is my garden after 3 weeks away. It's taking a bit of work, but there we go.
Fence painted?
No, it's au naturel. Don't need paint on that one.
Okay, all right. Jack genuinely was concerned about these things. He did say, I want to ask him about the radiator, and can you ask him about what he's doing with his fence?
As in Jack, well, clearly Jack has got better things to be doing because he can't be here, but he should be more concerned with what's going on the stages, not my DIY, I would say.
Well, there you go. But it's nice to get that other side, because listeners want to know, you know, rally fans want to know about your DIY.
Well, yeah, clearly. It's not all living the dream. Yeah, I've got to cut the grass and and the hedge every now and again.
There you go. Listen, Seb, we wanted to just check in with you, really. And, you know, from all of us here, we just wanted to congratulate you. I know it's a couple of weeks since it happened, but this is our first episode back. So, you know, from all of us, massive congratulations. And is, you know, that I hope it's the first of very, very many, because there's no more deserving than you right now.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate that. Cheers, guys.
There you go. Folks, you know where we live. It's Absolute_Rally on Twitter. It's facebook.com/AbsoluteRally. Or you can go onto the website, listen to the old episodes now, absoluterally.co.uk. And thanks to Pace Notes Rally Magazine, of course, for continuing to support us. We'll be back same time, same place in your podcast hall next week.